When the game tips off, the NBA action is just beginning on FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Because FanDuel is your home for NBA live betting. However you want to play, now is the perfect time to join. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sports betting partner of the NBA. 21 plus and present in Illinois. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Well, we spoke about this entire scouting internship with Baltimore. You did it for a year. You announced you're coming out of retirement. Now, where did this itch of wanting to come back come from?
Like week one, when I was scouting, you know, it was pregame and I'm on the field and I'm just looking at these guys. Like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? The itch was coming back like so bad. I would go to their meetings, defensive meetings, just sitting there and listen. And it had got so hard that like, I couldn't go to the meetings no more.
Welcome in. It is the Tuesday, January 21 edition of the NFL Spotlight Show. I am your host, Ari Mayrov. We, of course, just had the divisional round of the postseason. We have four teams remaining, three games left on the season. Sunday should be fascinating, of course, the Commanders and Eagles round three. And then, of course, the Bills and Chiefs for the fourth time here in the postseason. Sunday should be fun for a spot here in the Super Bowl. And because of what happened in the divisional round with the Lions getting eliminated, that also has caused the NFL and the coaching carousel to go crazy, and it is at a rapid pace right now. On Monday, we saw the Bears hire Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson as their new head coach. We are going to talk about all of that here on the back end of the show, the ramifications of that hire, and there is a lot going on with that hire and how it happened. That will all be coming up over here on the back end of today's show. But as we all know, today is a Tuesday. Every Tuesday here on NFL Spotlight, we have a special Spotlight guest. And joining us here today on the show, we have Los Angeles Chargers safety Tony Jefferson, who has been now in the NFL for over 10 years. I have a personal story and connection to Tony, which we talk about right away here in the interview. He actually meant a lot to my career in a way. It's a very funny story. You'll hear about it here in a couple of minutes. But somebody who went undrafted, was in Arizona for 4 years, went to Baltimore on a lucrative free agency contract, and quickly became a fan favorite and one of the better safeties in this league. A really, really great story. He was retired. He wants to become a future GM, was a scout for Baltimore, and on. There's a lot of really interesting things here in this discussion with Tony Jefferson. So we're going to go straight to that discussion right now with Tony. We'll talk about everything else happening in the NFL over here on the back end of the show, like I said. But for now, here is my full discussion, NFL Spotlight with Tony Jefferson. Joining us today here on NFL Spotlight, he went from being an undrafted free agent to having played in the NFL for over a decade, just finished his first season with the Chargers. It is Tony Jefferson. Tony, thanks so much for doing this. How's everything going?
Good, bro. Good. Still recovering a little bit from the playoff loss, yeah. You know, but other than that, man, I'm blessed, highly favored. And excited to get into this offseason.
Well, your season was a bit of an inspirational one, and we'll get into it because, of course, you were out of the NFL, kind of retired, doing some scouting stuff for the Ravens, turned it around, came back, played a full year with the Chargers, made the team, started some games, and you mentioned making the playoffs and playing here for Jim Harbaugh. But this is the NFL Spotlight Show. We love spotlighting people in the NFL who deserve more recognition. I said it, you've been playing now. You've been in the NFL for over a decade, and we go through their journeys and their stories. But before I go to all that for you, I want to thank you for something. And I don't know if you remember this, and you've since deleted that Twitter account, so I can't find the conversation. But when I started my Twitter page in 2013, I was just a guy who wanted to be a one-stop shop for NFL news. Didn't really know what I was doing, but slowly but surely, I started growing. A couple years later, while it was all going on, you were the first quote-unquote star player to ever just private message me. And that felt like a very big deal for me. And you asked me a question of, do you have the Pro Bowl balloting and where I am right now? And for me, as somebody who was just trying to do this and figure it out, not knowing what I was doing, that was a big deal for me. And we had a whole back and forth conversation. And that gave me the confidence that I could do this as an NFL thing and grow in this industry and get to know the people who are in this game, whether it's players and coaches and executives and agents. So the little story that I don't think you know, but that private message, I think it was 2016, 2017-ish, was a big deal for me.
Hey, man, that's dope, bro. I didn't know that. I mean, I kind of remember now. That was when I was with the Cardinals. I think I messaged you because I wanted to see where I was with the Pro Bowl. But, man, that's love, though, bro. That's love.
Yep, here we are now in 2025. You're still playing, and here I am right now. This has become a full-time job, which is crazy to think about. But that message meant a lot. And, of course, after that, you went on to sign in Baltimore. We'll get to all of it over here. But yeah. I did want to relay that over to you because it did mean something, and it, of course, led us all the way here. But let me go through your entire journey and career because we've had many guests here on the show who have had tough starts in the NFL, whether it's undrafted or overlooked or underscouted or whatever it is. But your path is a little bit different because you were supposed to be drafted, but you weren't. What do you remember about your entire draft process coming out of Oklahoma, where I think you were thinking, okay, maybe day two, maybe not, but day three for sure. And then all of a sudden, day three passes by and your name was not called at all.
Yeah, no, that time period was just kind of like, it was just so many roller coasters. I remember once I got my grade back when I was in college, I met with Coach Stoops, and the grade said I would be a second or third rounder. So me being a true junior, with that grade, I took the chance. I felt like, I just came off an All-American year. I had a pretty good resume leading up to that. So I took the chance. And, things happened. I think like 2 weeks after that I declared for the draft, there came out an article that was pretty much like killing my character, saying that I'm a bad teammate, I don't like to work hard, et cetera, that stuff. So that came out. And then I get to the combine, I got to answer questions to that. And then I ran a poor 40. I had a pop on my hamstring. In reality, I really shouldn't have competed in the combine because a few days before the actual combine, I like strained my hamstring. But I was like super competitive. I like wanted to go against, the guys in my class, and didn't post well. Ended up pulling my hamstring in the drill. So after that, it was kind of like up in limbo. My agent was telling me, hey, you didn't really help yourself with the combine, but you're still going to be drafted. Like, come on now, like your film, all that, who you are, like you're still going to be drafted. We're thinking maybe like day two, but obviously day three. So draft comes around. I remember like yesterday, April 27th, and the first round goes by. I remember the last safety taken was Matt Elam. He went to the Ravens, Baltimore. I believe it was like pick 32, something like that. And then, day two comes around. I'm sitting around and waiting by my phone, and nothing's happening. No, nothing. So I hit up my agent, like, all right, well, I guess tomorrow's the day. So we just sit through that last day. It's like, it gets to the sixth round, and then I'm starting to get calls, but these are, and I'm like, oh, I'm about to get drafted, but these are calls from teams like wanting me to be a priority free agent. I'm like, oh my gosh. So the seventh round comes around. And then the last phone call I got really for the draft was Rex Ryan. He called me. He was with the Jets. And he was like, I'm trying my best to get you. We're trying to figure out what we can do to make sure that we can draft you. And then I look up, and the Jets drafted a fullback. And I was like, man. And that was in the seventh round. I'm like, bro, I just got drafted. A fullback just got drafted in front of me. I'm cooked. My career's cooked. But, I had the opportunity to choose, which was probably better in that situation when you're undrafted rather than sixth, seventh round. You get to choose where you want to go. So I chose Arizona. I felt like there was more opportunity for me there, and went there, and the rest was history, honestly.
Now, Let me just ask you this. Did you have a draft party? Because if you did, I feel really bad.
No. Oh, and this is another crazy part. So, like, leading up to the draft, I was going to do it here in San Diego. So I'm from here. I'm from San Diego. Went to high school here, everything. So the local news reports, everybody's contacting me, like, every week. Like, we would love to host your draft party, blah, blah, blah. And, like, thank God. I was just like, nah, I just want to be with my family. I just want to keep it real close. Thank God I did that. Because if I would have been on camera, like, for 3 straight days and not getting called, I would have been, oh, man.
Well, we just had Kirby Joseph on here last week, and he was talking about his draft process. He was picked 97th overall, which is, like, the final picks in the third round. And he had family, friends, college teammates, the news floor, everybody was there, and he was bugging because he thought he's for sure a day two pick. And it gets to the bottom of the third round. He's calling his agent is sweating bullets. And then he finally gets that 313 phone call. So he did have a party. He got lucky a little bit, but his draft party stuff. he got something, but he almost went through having to wait another day. So luckily for you, you got to pick your team, and you picked a good situation of Arizona, because that was, you know, year one of Bruce Arians and everything. But there were some really high profile names on that defense. I'm curious to hear from you when you walk in and you have Patrick Peterson and Calais Campbell and Tyrann Mathieu. What was that like for you, especially after you make the team after a really strong preseason?
Yeah, it was very like, I don't know, when you go on with like you're undrafted, like you kind of just like, I just wanted to be quiet and just like listen. Like I wasn't trying to be like loud or like make any sudden movements. I mean, around my rookie class, I was able to be me because we were around each other a lot. But like once I got around the vets, I was kind of just more like, hey, yo, I'm just trying to I'm trying to make the team, bro. I don't want to make no problems with nobody. But I think that actually did help me. Because as I've grown and as long as I've been in the league, I start to see that like there's some rookies that come in with a little bit entitlement and kind of talk too much, and it kind of irks the nerves of like the veterans and stuff who've already been there and who are trying to set the culture. So I think that did pay me justice, and then also just like I got to learn from them. I was watching them, watch how they practice. I watched how they were a pro. So I think that situation helped me too. And, I had a very seasoned veteran named Jeremiah Bell when I was there. I think he was in like, year 11 or something. And I just came in and he kind of took me under his wing and was just like teaching me the game of just like football. Cause I think at Oklahoma, in college, my last year in college, it didn't really prep me, for the NFL as far as schemes and understanding defense. When I had Brent Venables the first 2 years, it was actually much better. I felt like I was learning the game of football. And then my last year kind of took a step back with the new DC. But once I got there, he really just taught me how like simple coverages, cover two, cover four, three, just ways of like, how can I become a better player? And that helped me out throughout the process.
Now, you eventually did become a full-time starter here in Arizona. You spent your first 4 years there. Was there any sense of, like, vindication going from undrafted to a key player on a defense that made some playoff runs, was a team that had a bye in the playoffs at one point? Like, did you ever have that sense of, you know what, I made it, I did it here?
Whew, no, never. Never in Arizona. Never in Arizona. Bruce Arians and co., they made it very clear to me that like every year I was fighting for a spot, regardless of how well I had played the year before. So like in 2015, we went to NFC Championship. I started pretty much throughout the whole year, played well as like a third safety. And so you would think going into the fourth year, once the starter gets released, that you would be the next guy up. Well, in their mind, they didn't view me as a starter. They actually signed another safety, Tyvon Branch, at the time to come in and take over for me. But that just kind of just fueled me. And I think that it changed me. Like, it changed my trajectory in my career once that happened. Because I remember that offseason, I just went ballistic. I went crazy in off-season training. Like, I had came back. They redid our body fat tests and, like, everything. And, like, I had, like, lost the most body fat within, like, that summer break. And then I went on to have, like, a breakout year. And, yeah, got a contract from it.
Yeah, let me just stick to that 2015 year before going to 2016, because that was the year you guys go 13-3. You make the championship game, and then you run into the Carolina Panthers. You were starting by then. I want to ask you, what was it like playing against a prime MVP Cam Newton? Because I always say that Cam is different.
Yeah. Yeah. He eliminated us 2 years in a row. We lost the year before in the wild card. And then we went back in 2015. And, I mean, the 2015 game was like – actually, both were blowouts. But 2015, he was just like going crazy. Cam was like – when you're about to play him, like during that time, it was like, oh, my gosh. Because he was just like – when he'd run, he would fall forward. Like, he's 6'6", like 280. It just felt like it was 280 when you get your hands on him. And, like, he wasn't, like, shying away from contact. His arm was alive. Like, it was just, he had it going on. And, you know, I had to give my respects to him and what he was able to do as a football player at that time, because he was clearly one of the best and tough to game plan and go against.
Yeah. So now let me ask you about just, you know, you finished your 4 years in Arizona. I remember there were some rumors. They're trying to get a deal done. They couldn't get a deal done. You eventually become a free agent. Second contract is what every player waits for, especially when you're an undrafted guy not making much. What do you remember about that process, teams actually wanting you? I remember there were a lot of Cleveland Browns rumors, then the Ravens came in last second. What was that entire process like, where now there are multiple teams wanting you compared to the draft where nobody wanted you?
Yeah, that's the crazy part, because like, I felt this, even though my agent was telling me, and I had a new agent at this time, he's like, I just left the combine. You're going to get paid. Like, you're going to get paid. But, like, in my head, it just took me back to draft night and draft process. Like, oh, you're going to get drafted. So, leading up to March 13th, I was scared. Like, I was nervous. I couldn't sleep. I'm like, what if something happens again, like the draft? Like, what if blah, blah, blah. And I kept telling my agent, like, are you sure? Like, everything's good. They're like, he's like, bro, you're good. I promise. So, it was nerve-wracking. It was nice. Like, I didn't even sleep. I'm just like the days leading up to free agency, I couldn't sleep. But it was cool because I got to see all the teams that wanted me and had interest in me. And it was quite a few, but obviously some teams were like, you're going to cost too much. And then I had to make a really, like, I believe it was a big decision, because I had to choose whether I wanted to take the big money or go to an organization that's known for winning and defense. So it came to a point where Cleveland was basically telling me I could write my own check, like, for what I want. That's basically how they were giving it to me. They were just like, just let us know what you want. Like, we need you here. We want you here. Blah, blah, blah. And throughout that process, I knew Baltimore was like in for me, because Eric Weddle was texting me like, hey, I think we could be a good duo, blah, blah, blah. And like, obviously Eric being in San Diego, like a big San Diego guy, like that's my guy. Like, so I was like, man. So I didn't really ask anybody, because I knew that like nobody else would be able to give me an answer for that. I would have to choose myself. And in the end, I chose winning organization. I chose Baltimore. It came down to those two, really, Cleveland and Baltimore. And I would never have changed that decision that I made.
I remember there were reports out that you took less from Baltimore instead of Cleveland. That ended up being true, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Unbelievable. And there was one more story I remember about that. I don't know why this stuck in my mind. I remember there was somebody, whether it was reported or maybe you tweeted it yourself, Is it true you use Madden and put yourself in a bunch of different jerseys to see how you would look like in each team?
I did do that, but that didn't really have any like rectification on who I was going to choose. That was more like some Madden promo.
Okay, fine. I don't know why that stuck in my mind. I remember somewhere, it was a swag thing or whatever.
It came out and people were like, bro, what are you doing? You actually, I'm like, bro, come on, bro. Like,
this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Every January brings an opportunity for us to start with a blank slate. And that means a chance to be the best versions of ourselves. So what do you want your 2025 to be?
Therapy is more than just talking to someone. It's reflecting on the fundamentals of who we are and what we want to create. I personally have used therapy in the past to sharpen my goals, hopes, and my dreams in life. Plus, it's just better to be able to talk through different battles I'm facing mentally and in everyday life. Therapy has been something that I've really used and really cherish. And BetterHelp is therapy fully online, making it affordable, convenient, and they're serving already over 5 million people worldwide. You can access a diverse network of more than 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties, and you can easily switch therapists at any time for no extra cost.
Give BetterHelp a try and be the person you want to be in 2025. Visit BetterHelp.com/NFL Spotlight today to get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/NFL Spotlight. Well, that decision to go to Baltimore obviously paid off because you quickly became a fan favorite. You played alongside Eric Weddle. That was one of the better defenses in the NFL. I think there was a point where you guys were allowing less than 19 points per game. What was it about just the entire Ravens culture? And it felt like there was this brotherhood, a friendship, a togetherness that most places just don't have. Did you feel that?
Oh, yeah. I felt it immediately. I felt it when I got there. I remember getting there. I brought my son with me to sign and all that. And it just right away, it was just like, wow. Like, you just feel it. You feel the love. No judgment. It's like, be who you are. You know what I mean? And, like, the fact that, like, you can be who you are and then, like, people aren't judging you. They're accepting you for who you are. And that's for everybody. It just makes, like, coming to work a lot easier, a lot more fun. Everything's more fluent. And everybody's about winning. Everybody wants to win. And I like being around like-minded people like that. And that's why the culture is what it is. They're always going to be in it when it comes to like winning, because that's how we practice. That's how, not we, but that's how they practice, and that's how they move around. So I really like view that whole organization as like an extended part of my family.
Well, there obviously was a lot of success with that defense, with that team, with the players you were around. You know, there was one bit of a, I guess, a rough point was in 2019, October 6th, when you tore your ACL versus the Steelers. What do you remember about that? Because you know the business of football. In that situation, when that happened, your contract had no more guaranteed money. Did it already cross your mind that this could be the end of my time here in Baltimore when all that happened?
I already knew. So I'm a big... I scouted, obviously, we'll probably talk about that later, but I'm big into like knowing. I know everybody always is like, hey, go ask Adam Schefter, like, because I know all the ins and outs of contracts, guaranteed money, like actually pay attention to all that stuff. But I knew it once I got hurt. I mean, I knew basically that year I was most likely going to be traded or released at the end of the season just because we had just signed Earl and like my guaranteed money was up. So I was going to want a new contract anyways, but it could have been possible that I got extension or something. But I kind of just knew like I was playing on my contract here. And I just remember just taking that step and that non-contact injury happened. Kind of just knew, I was like, dang, this could be my last time in the Ravens uni right here. So that's what really hurt the most outside of like the pain in my knee during that moment. It was just like, this is it. This could be it.
You know, it's interesting to hear you talk about how you know the business of football, because I know there are a lot of players who simply do not fully understand it at all. Where did that come from? We'll talk about the scouting thing in a second, but where did that whole thing come from where you love the business side, you understand the cap, the guaranteed, non-guaranteed, contracts work? Was that something you always loved before getting into the game, or is that something that came along as you were in the league?
I think it's something that I love football so much that like I'm never like not afraid to learn too much about the game and like how it works on any side. And like I always felt like I've really been scouting without even like knowing since like middle school. I remember when I was in middle school, we had just started up some Pop Warner team in this area. It was only like 3 years open. I had just moved there, and I went around the school and I would pick out like the biggest guys that I seen like that could run the fastest at like PE, stuff like that. And I got them who have never played football. It was predominantly Hispanics. They had never played football, but I got them to come out, and a bunch of them just stayed playing football the rest of their lives. And we ended up playing together in high school. And their first time playing was because I asked them to go try out and come sign up for our football team, and they end up liking it. So I've been doing that for a while, just like that aspect of it. I love the process of like building a team and putting a team together. So that's always just kind of been like what's on the forefront of my mind. And at the end of the day, it's just football, and I love football.
Yeah, so you missed all of 2020 with that ACL tear. You made a comeback. You were with the 49ers for one regular season game on the practice squad. You made it back to the Ravens, actually played a little bit with them. You were with the Giants for a year and then retired. You mentioned this entire scouting intern thing you did because the Ravens brought you back to be with them. You just spoke about your passion for roster building and scouting. Was it always a goal for you to be in the NFL and doing that? And how did that opportunity with the Ravens come from? Was that a Eric DaCosta conversation? Was it an Ozzie Newsome conversation? Where did it all come from?
I've kind of like for a long time, even when I was with the Cardinals, I think it was like 2014 or 2015, I put out my first like mock draft. And I was a young guy at this time doing this. And like, I've always wanted to be a general manager. Like that's always been my end goal. And once I got to Baltimore, obviously me and Eric DaCosta, we were close. I love that dude. And we would talk. I remember one day where I practiced one of the rookies. We're talking about one of the rookies. And as we're talking, I was like, yeah, I really like him. I think he does well, blah, 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 talking about that. And then on the field, as we're talking, he gets an interception. Wow. Yeah, then Eric looks at me. He's like, you should be a scout one day. And that was, I believe that was 2017 or 2018, he said that.
Yeah.
So we had those conversations like throughout the years I was there. And then, I hit him up once I like retired, and I was like, "Hey, I think I want to do scouting. I'm pretty sure like that's kind of where I want to go now that I'm done." And he's like, "All right, cool, come on in." So we started right away. We started off with the internship thing just to make sure that like I liked it, et cetera. And so yeah, I did that the whole year. I did it the whole year, whole football season year. And towards the end, they liked where I was at. They liked my reports and everything. So they gave me some colleges to do. So I got to go on the road a little bit at the end. So I got a little bit of both so early, like basically as an intern, but they really believe that like I have a place in the front office whenever I feel like I'm ready. I mean, after we played against them this year, against the Ravens, DaCosta came up to me. He's like, "Hey, we miss you in the building. We still got a spot for you." So I know, I mean, if I ever want to, I'd probably do that again.
The other one would be, I mean, you mentioned Eric a lot, but have you spoken to Ozzie, who of course made the player as a Hall of Fame? And then I think you should be a GM Hall of Famer as well. Have you spoken to him about the entire front office and doing all that?
Oh yeah. I mean, when I was scouting in Baltimore, my locker was right across from him. And Ozzie works out crazy every day. So I go to the bathroom, I go by my locker, and Ozzie's in there. We have our talks. He's put me on so much game on like how it transitioned for him and all that type of stuff. So I've had great talks with Ozzie. Ozzie's my guy.
Yeah. I mean, I look at him, like I said, I mean, he's a Hall of Famer as a tight end. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame as a GM as well. Become the first ever person to go into the Hall of Fame in two different sections. He's a special, special human there in Baltimore and is still working there. All right. So did you enjoy that entire scouting internship, doing that as an intern? And do you see yourself continuing that eventually? I know you said you're going to go back to play this year. You want to continue, but do you see that as a path for you where you want to climb the front office ladder, eventually maybe become a GM in this league?
Yeah, I've, like I said, I definitely have a love for it. But I will say, I do have four kids right now, and the hours that is put in for scouting, you really got to have a situation where you're like, okay, I'll see the kids like in the morning maybe, because the hours are all day. So I would have to double back on that and think about that. And then also, and it's not to like, you know, excuse any workload that I should have, but I do personally feel that, like, I feel like I played the game so long and I, like, my knowledge is like a little higher. I really don't want to start from like the bottom. Like, and that's what I was doing. I mean, I was picking up guys from the airport and they were good about like me not going and cutting people, because I couldn't do that. Like, I couldn't go and like release players, like, especially like I played with some of those guys a year before, like when I was there. So like they were really good on that. They respected it. But yeah, it's just like I kind of want to be like in a more bigger role, like if I do go back, just because like I feel like I'm there enough to be able to talk about like football operations like on a daily basis, or like, you know, college guys, stuff like that.
Well, we spoke about this entire scouting internship with Baltimore. You did it for a year. In June of 2024, you announced you're coming out of retirement and you try out for the Chargers. Now, where did this itch of wanting to come back come from?
Like week one when I was scouting, like when I was scouting, bro, it was our first home game. Cause we, as a scouts, obviously would go down to the game and, you know, it's pregame and I'm on the field and I'm just looking at these guys. I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? Why am I not out here warming up, getting ready for week one? And like, that's every week it got harder. And like, it got so hard because I used to go into Mike McDonald was our defensive coordinator. And when I was there, he was like our DB coach and linebacker coach. So that's my guy. But I would go to their meetings, defensive meetings, just sitting there and listen. And it had got so hard that like I couldn't go to the meetings no more. And everybody's like, where were you, bro? Why weren't you in the meeting? I'm like, bro, I can't do it, bro. Like the itch was coming back like so bad. And I remember like it had got to like week 12. I hit my agent. I'm like, hey, I don't know, but like I'm getting an itch again. And he's like, no, don't do it. Stick to the scouting. You're doing good. I've been hearing good things about you in the scouting world, blah, blah, blah. But I couldn't hold it, bro.
Well, I get it. And there are many players like that who call it a career and then want to come back. So you did try out for the Chargers. You do make the team. And the thing about the Chargers, it was year one of Jim Harbaugh. Obviously, Joe Ortiz, I'm sure you bumped into him in Baltimore. Now he's there with the Chargers. They were not expected to be contenders in 2024. I mean, they moved on from, you know, Keenan and Mike Williams and Austin Eckler. But this group defied the expectations. They made the playoffs. What was it about this team that made it so special? Which Jim Harbaugh, by the way, calls it the best group I've been around in my entire coaching career.
I mean, I will have to say that I did feel like the expectations were to get to the playoffs. It never was not that once I got there. Like when I got there, I had a tryout for the mini camp, which I was completely out of shape for because I had barely started training like literally like a month and a half max before that mini camp. I was fat from scouting, bro. I was chubby. I was out of shape. I hadn't run. So like I tried to hurry up and do all that. Shout out to them because they had to see something in me that was like, okay, he can do that. Cause like right then and there, I was not in shape. Like, and I had like pulled my hamstring that Thursday before camp. But anyways, when I got there, bro, it was just like, everybody expected to win. Everybody was trying hard. Like everybody was working hard. No complaints. They just were bought in to what Jim and his staff were able to bring. And it just made work like so easy because everybody was on the same wave.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously you guys made the playoffs. It was a tough playoff loss. You've already announced you want to come back in 2025. There's a different player on the team, Khalil Mack, who's out there saying, I'm not sure, I'm considering retirement. Do you want to be back with the Chargers? Do you want to test the free agent market? What's the plan over here for you?
We've talked already. They know where I want to be. They know I want to be in LA. And I'm hoping we can get that squared away. But you know, hopefully Khalil's back too. Like, he's a monster. I love being teammates with K-Mac. He's a GOAT, bro. He's definitely getting a yellow jacket, and the way he like preps and the way he like is every day. You know what I'm saying? That kept me going. That kept me motivated. And he didn't even know, but I'd be like, yeah, my dog K-Mac out here grinding, getting it right. Even though he is older than me, I didn't even know that. I thought I was older than him. Yeah. Like, once you get this age, I think I'm like the oldest on the team. Bro. I'm like, but yeah, bro, I loved it there. I loved it in LA. They know that. It's so much love over there. So yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. Khalil did say that he's considering it, but he did say that if he does come back, he wants to be back with the Chargers, just like you said. All right, this is the final question I ask every guest who comes on the show. It's the NFL Spotlight Show. We love spotlighting people in the league who deserve more recognition for what they've done. Maybe people have not noticed them that much. Tony, you could give me a player, a coach, an executive, somebody outside the box. Who do you think deserves to be in this seat here in the future?
It only has to be one.
You could do two.
Because I have two. Okay, right, but it may sound biased because they're on my team. It's all good. But one's a coach. Can I do that?
Go ahead, coach, executive, whoever you want. You know a lot of people in this league. I know you.
So the first player, and I'll make sure he gets on if you ever want to reach out to him. His name is Deion Henley. He really is a Pro Bowl linebacker, second year in the league. They didn't give him his Pro Bowl recognition, but he deserves it. But his jump from year one to year two and, like, what I believe he can become, he's going to be a top linebacker in this league. So I would love to have him on and getting the spotlight that he deserves. And then for coach would be my DB coach, my safeties coach, Chris O'Leary. He came over from Notre Dame, and now he's in the league. I'm older than him, but he's bro. I will say I learned this year. I will have to say, like, he's up there with, like, being one of my favorite, like, day to day coaches. I learned so much on, like, from a safety standpoint. Even though I played it however long, I was taught so much other stuff by him, and like how to make plays and be in position. So spotlight needs to be on that dude, because he's going to be a DC one day and then a head coach. And I want to be, you know how I helped you out in the beginning in 2013? I want to do that for him, because I already know what he's going to be. So if you can get a spotlight on him at some point, that would be great. And then we could look back and be like, TJ said it. So
I would love to get both here on the show. And you definitely understood the question perfectly. Those are two guys who do not get much recognition. I'll be honest with you, I've never heard of the DB's coach. I'm going to have to do some more research there. Henley, I've seen a lot of mic'd up clips here this year of the Chargers, and you guys love him. He does not get talked about at all, and he's somebody who deserves it as well. But I'm going to do the research on both. I would love to get both on. We'll definitely keep in touch on it. But Tony, it was an honor to have you on. Like I told you in the beginning, you played a big role in my career, so I wanted to thank you for that as well. And thank you so much for coming here on the show, spotlighting your career, and continued success as a player. If you want to do the front office stuff, I hope you have success in that, and as well as a dad, because I know you have four little ones at home as well.
All right, I appreciate it, bro. Respect, bro, to you. Keep grinding, keep thriving, bro. I'm obviously going to keep following and keeping up with you, bro. You're doing great. And much respect, bro.
It is playoff time, conference championship week, Eagles, Commanders, Bills, and Chiefs. Three games left in the season. It is now or never. Don't miss out on the last few weeks of football action with Prize Picks, the best place to win cash while watching the playoffs.
You just have to pick more or less on at least two players for a shot to win up to 1,000 times your cash. That's right. Prize Picks is now offering up to 1,000 times your cash. One of the biggest reasons I love Prize Picks is the flex play, which means you can still cash out even if your lineup isn't perfect. You can double your money even if one of your picks doesn't hit. Prize Picks puts their members first, so all withdrawals are fast, safe, and secure. And when my picks hit, I can get my money in as quick as 15 minutes. Also, Prize Picks now offers MasterCard for quick and easy deposits into your account this sports season.
Download the app today. Use the code Ari, A-R-I, to get $50 instantly after you place your first $5 lineup. Again, download the app today. Use the code Ari, A-R-I, and you'll get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, run your game. Special thanks to Charger safety Tony Jefferson for joining us here this week on the show. Great interview, great discussion with a guy who has been doing it for a long time. And like I said, at the very, very beginning of the interview, somebody who private messaged me way back when I started this account. I started it in 2013. People who remember the OGs, they all remember it wasn't even called Ari Merrill back then. It was just called NFL Updates. He reached out. I was like, holy cow. And that's when I knew I have a shot over here at covering the NFL. And here we are now in 2025 talking to each other here on the NFL Spotlight Show. He will become a free agent this offseason. Like he said, he wants to be back with the Chargers. We will see what happens here in the coming months with Tony Jefferson. But special thanks to him for joining us here on the show this week. All right, let's wrap it up over here on this Tuesday. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about with things happening around the NFL. Let me bring in my good friend Ben Allen. Ben, what is going on? The NFL coaching cycle is going bananas.
Yeah, no doubt. The hottest coaching candidate is now officially off the market. Just 2 days after being eliminated from the playoffs, Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson has agreed to become the next head coach of the rival Chicago Bears, joining forces with quarterback Caleb Williams, of course. The Bears secured an agreement with Johnson, but there was also a belief he could go some other places, this, that, and the other. How did this all ultimately happen?
Yeah, I mean, for now, weeks. There has, first of all, dating back to last year, Ben Johnson has always been intrigued by the Chicago Bears. Of course, last offseason, they had number one overall pick, so much cap space. Like, if that job opened up last year, I think Ben would have strongly considered them last year as well. But of course, they kept Matt Eberflus. But it had opened up this year. They had a virtual interview, and there were a lot of back channel conversations going on with Ben Johnson's new agent, with the president, Kevin Warren, with the GM, Ryan Poles, with ownership as well in terms of what their role will be when it comes to the football operation, just letting the football people do football stuff. And we mentioned it for weeks over here on the show. For Ben Johnson, what mattered for him was alignment and collaboration and everyone being on the same page and basically pulling in the same direction. And he basically got the sense that in Chicago, even though Ryan Poles was already there, even though right now these two are going to be on different contract lengths, we'll see if they change Ryan Poles' contract, he felt comfortable enough to join this organization and team up with Caleb Williams as his quarterback. It was about a month ago when the Bears and Lions played each other. In his press conference during the week, he was asked about Caleb Williams. He mentioned how the special talent who's very creative, who will be a good quarterback in this league. So he's been keeping an eye on Chicago and that situation for a while, and he felt comfortable enough with this to the point, Ben, we don't see this often in the NFL. The Bears hired Ben Johnson, and Ben Johnson accepted this job without having an official in-person interview with people in that organization. Usually you want to bring in the guys, show them the organization, show them the facility. He was comfortable enough without even needing to do that. He will officially do that on Tuesday when he will officially meet everybody and sign his contract, and everything will be in place. But you look at all the openings out there in terms of the roster. The Bears have a really good roster with a lot of really good talent there. The offensive line definitely needs some help, but quarterback, running backs, receivers, tight ends, defense, there's a lot of really good players there, and they have cap space, and they have draft picks coming up with their first round pick and then 2 second round picks, their own, and Carolina. So there's a lot over here to work with in Chicago, and Ben Johnson now goes from being in Detroit, being in Dan Campbell, to facing Detroit and Dan Campbell twice a year as the new head coach in Chicago.
So we've talked about previously the different runs that other teams had to try to pursue him, whether it was Tom Brady going out there and kind of just trying to reel in Ben and say, hey, you know what, maybe do consider this Raiders job, or the Jaguars basically floating, look, if we need to get rid of Bulkey or move him in some way, we'll do it, and you can bring in your own GM. Clearly, at the end, it was Chicago, and that's what he wanted to do. But how close would you say those other two teams were to actually securing his services?
I mean, we talked about this last week when we did our head coach GM roundup of what's going on around the NFL. I don't know where this narrative came that the Raiders were the front runners and it was hot and things were going on around the NFL. I guess people were talking about it and the Tom Brady element. And yes, Ben Johnson and Tom Brady did speak to each other over Zoom. Tom Brady also spoke to Ben Johnson's agent, but at no point did Ben Johnson or his agent Rick Smith ever say, yeah, we think we're going to go with you whenever Ben's season comes to an end. I mean, from the beginning, the most intriguing team for Ben was Chicago. I would put Jacksonville number two. And then Las Vegas was even lucky to even get an interview in the first place. And Chicago, their number one candidate going into all of this, was Ben Johnson. So there was mutual interest in all of this. And at no point did it ever break up. So I don't know where the Raiders thing came from. I can tell you right now, it was not from Ben's side. Wherever it came from, whichever media organization that did it, I don't know where that happened, but at no point did it ever feel like the Raiders were the front runners. In terms of money offered, I could see the Raiders being the ones who were willing to offer the most, but this was not all about the money for Ben Johnson. If he wanted the money, he could have gotten it last year from Washington. He could have gotten it 2 years ago from Carolina. It was not all about the money for him. So he liked the situation in Chicago. He spoke in a three-hour Zoom meeting with everyone in that organization that mattered, and it was enough for him to like the situation to go there. Jacksonville, in my mind, for what it's worth, I think Ben was also very intrigued by that situation. And when this entire process started, most people believed it was going to come down to Jacksonville versus Chicago. But the Jaguars obviously did not move on from their GM in Trent Baalke. There were some discussion that happened about maybe Trent moves into a different part of the organization after the draft if we hire Ben. But they also interviewed other candidates, and those other candidates, at least from my understanding, are okay with Trent staying there as the current GM. And Trent, from my knowledge, has been pushing a little bit to get those candidates to the top of the list and try to sway Ben down, and clearly he succeeded in that. So now he ends up in Chicago and obviously not in Jacksonville. But this was Chicago as the number one spot from the beginning, and it finally got done on Monday with no in-person interview happening, which again is very rare.
So let's talk about what's next for Chicago. So you get your coach you want. You already have your franchise quarterback there with Caleb Williams. You only have like one free key agent and a guy in Keenan Allen. Their expectations this year were pretty high and maybe unfairly high with Caleb Williams in his rookie season. What is 2025 going to be like for the Bears? Do you anticipate them going out there and basically saying, we're here, we've arrived, we've got our star head coach, we're going to look to add star talent, we're going to look to spend some money? Or could you see this be one of those years where everyone tries to feel it out, understand their role, and see if they can build something a little bit slower?
Well, when you have a quarterback on his rookie contract, you want to take advantage of those years. And I think the Bears tried to do that last year. We saw how they spent money, whether it was trading for Keenan Allen, who had a big contract there, and then, of course, extending their own players, whether it was Jalen Johnson and Montez Sweat and on. They were ready to spend and move things around to try to build a competitive team. And they started off 4-2, we all know what happened after that with the Hail Mary and then the 10-game losing streak before winning in Week 18. But this is a team who believes they could compete in the NFC North. We know what the NFC North did this year. They sent three teams to the postseason, but they believe they could be right there, and they believe they got the number one head coaching candidate in this year's cycle. So I anticipate the Bears trying to push forward and try to make this roster even better. We're going to see now what Ben Johnson does over here with his coaching staff, because that is going to be very important. I've mentioned this a couple of times over here on the show to you, Ben, in previous episodes dating back a couple of weeks now. Ben Johnson, over these last couple of years, has been learning and talking to people about what it takes to be a head coach in the NFL. It's not like being an offensive coordinator where all you do is draw up plays and talk to your quarterback and that's it. There are a lot more layers that are taken when it comes to becoming a head coach. There's a lot of things that happen off the field that come to your desk that is not expected, and Ben Johnson has been preparing for that. And when you're going to see this coaching staff that he's creating over here, Ben wants to be very involved with the offense, just like he was in Detroit. And part of doing that is hiring a staff around him with veteran coaches who could take care of the rest of the roster. And we're going to see they're going to have a full defensive coordinator search. But as reported by multiple people, his number one target right now is Dennis Allen, who has been a two-time head coach in this league and is a really good defensive coordinator. Darren Rizzi, the former Saints special teams coordinator, interim head coach, previous guest here on the show, that is a name who he's also targeting to be a special teams coordinator. He also has a lot of interest from other teams, including Denver. But what Ben Johnson wants to do right now is to add veteran minds onto his staff. It's a little bit similar to what we saw Sean McVay when he was hired with the Rams. He hired Wade Phillips, told Wade, take care of the defense for me. I'm going to take care of the offense. We're going to see Ben Johnson trying to do the same thing now here in Chicago. From a roster perspective, we mentioned it before, over $60 million in cap space. They could create much more with a couple of cuts and restructuring some contracts. And they have a lot of draft picks here coming up, including their first round pick and 2 second round picks. And again, they already have a lot of talent on this roster. Caleb Williams, number one overall pick. We know the talent. He was here on the 33rd Teams podcast with Amon-Ra St. Brown, Equanimeous St. Brown last week. And he basically said, I want Ben Johnson as my head coach. He is getting him as the head coach. So it's a big day in Chicago. It's a new era in Chicago, and they got their guy. And their hopes right now for 2025 is to have a big year. And yes, there will be playoff expectations in Chicago in 2025.
All right, let's swing it back to Detroit. Their head coach, Dan Campbell, had already expressed to the media that he's prepared to lose both of his coordinators. One of them's already gone with Ben Johnson. Aaron Glenn could very well be looking at the New Orleans job, the New York Jets job. Hell, he might even have a job by the time you're listening to this. There's a really real possibility he's going to go out there and get a gig. So Dan Campbell has already said, we're going to go ahead and look at the options. We have a lot of great internal candidates that he believes could step up and fill those positions, but he's also not going to be afraid to go out there and look at some of the guys who are free agents themselves. What do you anticipate to be the plan there in Detroit and ultimately what they decide on?
Yeah, this is the hard part for Detroit and why it's so hard to swallow that they lost here in the divisional round, because Dan Campbell knew there's a high probability he's losing his offensive coordinator and his defensive coordinator to head coaching job. So making the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl was obviously the goal, and losing this early hurts. The one thing about this, it's not just losing your OC and DC. I could see Ben Johnson and eventually Aaron Glenn taking stuff from their staff underneath them as well over to their new team. So Dan Campbell is going to be losing more than just two coaches over here. I think Ben Johnson will take some people with him. I think Aaron Glenn, who is scheduled to interview with the Jets, possibly the Saints as well, he's going to take people from the defensive staff as well. So Dan Campbell is going to have to fill up a bunch of positions here, not just the two coordinators, but also some position coaches on both sides of the ball. As for the Lions and what they'll do at OC and DC, Dan Campbell, like you said, mentioned there's some guys on staff. Scotty Montgomery is an option there for offensive coordinator. But again, they might have a full search over there and try to go outside the building as well. Defensive coordinator, I'll be keeping a very, very close eye on linebackers coach Kelvin Shepard, former player as well. He is somebody, I remember I was at the Senior Bowl 2-3 years ago, and the Lions were the coaching staff there. He was up and close with the players. He's a player's coach. The players love him. Kind of embodies everything Dan Campbell wants. A loud guy, energy guy. I would keep an eye on him being the future defensive coordinator in Detroit. He was on my up and coming rising coaching list that I did at the start of this season and last season. So I think he is a very, very important name there in Detroit, someone that they've been developing over here in his coaching career. And he could be somebody who takes over for Aaron Glenn should he get a head coaching job, which I think he does. So Dan Campbell is prepared to lose a lot of people. He knew this day will eventually happen. He was lucky last year and nobody left, but it's happening now here going into the 2025 season. He's going to have to make some changes. So Detroit now has an open OC job. They're eventually going to have an open DC job, and they're going to have some other position coaches to fill up as well. But those are some names to keep an eye on there in Detroit.
And finally, the head coaching positions are now dwindling. What does this mean for the rest of the potential head coaching candidates out there? And how do you see things changing now that Ben Johnson's under or soon to be under contract with the Bears?
So we know how the entire head coaching carousel was going so slow to this point. Obviously, New England moved quick. They knew they wanted Vrabel. They didn't waste any time. All the other teams, they all had interest in both these Lions coordinators. It was Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn. Obviously, them losing on Saturday night basically created a situation where this carousel is now spinning, and it is spinning really fast. It is rapid pace right now, and it's officially moving. Ben Johnson goes to Detroit. Aaron Glenn is interviewing with the Jets here on Tuesday. That's today. He is scheduled to have the Saints on Wednesday. If he doesn't get a deal done with one of those two teams, I could see him interviewing with the Raiders and the Jaguars as well. The Cowboys are also looming a little bit, but I think they might have fallen too far behind when it comes to Aaron Glenn. But those are names right now that we'll be keeping up next very, very closely. Then the Jaguars, they're also very much moving now. They wanted Ben Johnson. Ben is out. The names to keep an eye on over there, they have Robert Saleh coming in for a second interview. Patrick Graham, Raiders defensive coordinator, coming in for a second interview. Both of those are going to be in person. I think they were very, very intrigued by Robert Saleh, who was a linebackers coach for them, still has a relationship with Shad Khan. We mentioned this last time. The way the Jets season started, 2-3, not good. They fired Robert Saleh. The way it completely collapsed after Robert left has made teams believe that Robert was not the problem in New York. And if he has another shot, they do believe he could be better. So he's definitely a name to watch. Robert and Patrick are both going to be in person. Because that's in person, that also means they will officially satisfy the Rooney Rule for what it's worth. Liam Cohen, the Bucs OC, is also a name to watch in Jacksonville. Dallas is just a different category than all these other teams. They're moving in their own pace. Jerry has his own world. He's doing it his own way. There have been, honestly, nobody truly knows what is going on in Dallas besides Jerry Jones. I had one person tell me, like, you can call as many people as you want. If you're not talking to Jerry Jones, you know nothing. So that is kind of what is going on right now in Dallas. Obviously, know about Deion Sanders. There's been some Jason Witten rumors. There have been some Brian Schottenheimer rumors. They did interview Robert Saleh. They did interview Leslie Frazier. That does make them comply with the Rooney Rule as well. Both of those were in person. So they could make a hire as soon as right now if they want to. But Jerry is living in his own world and taking his time. It is worth noting, last time Dallas had a head coaching search, it was pretty short. It was pretty fast. I think they only interviewed 3 or 4 people. So this thing with Dallas could happen at any time. But again, Jerry is doing it his way. But we got Ben Johnson on Monday. I think we could have news on Tuesday with the Jets, with their GM search. I think that is also starting to move a little bit. And also the head coach market with all those teams that I just mentioned, it is going to move much, much faster now that Detroit is officially eliminated.
And we'll be talking more about all those vacancies being filled, both the GM and the head coaching, on our updates here that we do Monday through Friday on our Apple and Spotify feed. So make sure you're clicking over to those, listen to those, follow, like, drop a comment, whatever, all that kind of stuff. And also, we have all our spotlight guests. Great job here today with our wonderful guest, Tony Jefferson. We had Kirby Joseph the week before. We've had Kurt Menefee. We've had a lot of people on recently. They'll give you a full feel of what our Spotlight show is like, everything that's coming up. We've got some really good guests that are on the horizon here we're super excited about. And also listen out for our great segments that we've been doing on Friday. We're going through all of our predictions, what we think is going to happen. We got the conference championships coming up. And yeah, make sure you're following Ari. If you're watching this on X right now and you're not following him, I don't really know what you're doing. So make sure you're doing that. And that's all I got for you, Ari.
Yep. We have a lot more here coming up around the NFL. Like you said, Ben, it's only getting started right now over here. It's only going to fire up and get really, really busy with the coaching cycle, the GM cycle, and of course, the conference championship games coming up on Sunday and eventually the Super Bowl and the rest of the offseason. This is really when my regular season starts. So we're going to have a lot of things going on around the NFL. So stay Locked In with NFL Spotlight. We're here Monday to Friday, every Tuesday with a Spotlight guest. And we will be back here tomorrow morning going around the NFL once again. See you then.